All right, what's happening, folks? We are back for episode 10 of the Surrender Birdies podcast. First one of these I've done is since last fall. We're going to pick up a few more of these this year. I'm joined by a buddy of mine, a big-time golfer, David Lee, avid golfer. David, how's it going, man?
It's going well. Thanks for having me on. It's an honor and a privilege to be on with the Beltway Golfer today.
Absolutely. It's a privilege to have you on, man. For those that haven't listened to one of these Surrender Birdies, these are less interview style and more just kind of a organic, fun conversation about what's going on in me and whoever I have on, in this case, David, what we've got going on in golf, what we're looking forward to, what we've been doing. And it gives me a chance to tell some of my own stories as opposed to some of the interviews in the Beltway Golfer. But the first thing I want to chat about with you, David, so you invited me out to, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe it was your first, unless it was your second, your 100-hole hike out at Schoolhouse 9. It feels like a year ago, but it was just last month, or was it earlier this month?
It was March 24th. So
it has been a couple
over a month ago. Yeah.
I want to hear kind of your thoughts on putting together. I mean, 100 hole hikes have become more and more popular, it seems like, in recent years as ways to raise money for causes, foundations, charities while playing golf. Schoolhouse 9 seemed to be a perfect place to do it. You know, the longest hole is what, like 100 and I don't even remember. Like 160. Yeah, I feel like I used a 6-iron.
Yeah, there was like a 175.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was good. It's a perfect place to do a 100-hole challenge. And it was our first 100-hole challenge. And I've held a couple scrambles in the past. And I like doing them. Probably shouldn't say this, but I like putting them on. It's not my, like, the first thing I look to play in. I like checking out new courses in architecture. So Schoolhouse 9 was kind of perfect. We were able to raise a lot of money with the 100-hole model. I'm not sure if we can officially call it a 100-hole hike.
Is that a trademark?
It might be. It might be. I appreciate the good work that Youth on Course does, but it might be one of those situations too. Yeah. So
oh, that's funny. I noticed that you called it a 100-hole challenge.
I was called the 100.
Okay.
Yeah, just so that, you know, all of our hard-earned fundraising money can go to the kids that deserve it and not to some legal fees or anything like that. But yeah, it's like the perfect place to hold an event like that. And I've never done 100 holes in a day. And it was a good way to meet a bunch of folks. I think we might have talked about teeing it up sometime when we met at Solheim early this year. And just it's a good way to get a whole bunch of people out and play golf with a bunch of different people too. Some that I have and haven't been able to play with since starting to do some of the scrambles and other charity fundraisers that we do for Little Lights.
That's a good point, by the way, because all these events, like, you know, there's so many people, and I'm sure you're the same way, because you just touched on it, that you meet folks like at, like you and I first met, I think it was at the, what's called the Mad Scramble, Eric Anders Lang, Mad Scramble at East Potomac. But you meet people, whether it's through Instagram or randomly at a golf course, or, you know, and you're like, oh yeah, we should tee it up sometime. And then you see them again, say, yeah, we should tee it up sometime. And then 5 years pass and you haven't teed it up. But like a small event like that is perfect. So you can kind of event people. It's all those people that you've been meaning to have out or invite to a foursome, and you can check that off the list and get to know them a little bit.
Yeah. And I was really grateful. I mean, for, you know, it was kind of it was the first one, and it was a limited field. I think we ended up only having 16 golfers out there, and we had 19 scheduled before. But it worked out perfectly. There's enough room for people to kind of switch up. I think you played with a couple different groups too, and nothing really got in the way. You know, things kept moving. I like to keep my events as quick as I like to keep my golf rounds too. So I appreciate, you know, when people don't have people waiting on each other, you know, just to get one golf in. So
that was perfect, because it wasn't crowded. You know, 16 people on a short 9-hole course. We had all day. The weather was like ridiculously perfect. Yeah, I got to meet. I mean, I'm trying to remember. I knew Randall from Langston. And you, I don't think I knew anybody else there. And I showed up, you know, people kind of showed up at different times in the morning. And there were some people who were already out on the course when I got there. And there was another gentleman, I'm forgetting his name, but he runs a Korean restaurant in Pentagon City. What's his name?
Yeah, Scott Chung.
Scott Chung. And I met him in the parking lot. And I was like, hey, you want to get started? Jump out. And we just kind of jumped out and ended up playing the first, like, I don't know, 25, 30 holes together. And he was great. Like, and he was a lot of fun to play with. We had a lot in common. And I've been meaning to check out his restaurant. I haven't yet.
Yeah, you should. Yeah, it was great how everyone kind of was able to work and work together and fill in the spaces on the course. I saw some guys like kind of jump there. You know, people were getting a little backed up in a certain area. And I saw somebody like jump over to an open spot on the course. And I was like, you know, it was a good small group of golfers that are considerate for each other. And I think that's what we need in golf. So I was really, really pleased with the event and the way everyone's self-regulated, I guess. So.
Yeah. And then there was one gentleman there who was a unique personality. I'm so terrible with names, but he was a bit of a character. I had come across him a couple times on social media for different things, but his goal, he did two things. One is the first time I saw him in the morning, he had already had his shirt off and he was out there making birdies and he's filming videos trying to get the attention of Jason Kelce. I can't remember what the motivation for that was, but his goal for the day was to break the record for most nine holes walked that I believe is from Sweetens Cove.
Yeah, I think it's a record from Matt Adamski at Sweetens Cove. That's where I met this individual, Joe Bidwell.
Joe Bidwell. Okay, there's his name.
Yeah, and so I can't say that I do understand Joe's motivations and some of the things he does, but I do love getting together and playing with Joe. My wife, Jess, and I met Joe in Sweetens Cove. And he was playing as a single. They do this whole ceremony in the beginning. And they're like, who wants to play? At the end of it, they're like, who wants to play with a single? And so, like, nobody kind of put their hands up. Everyone kind of came with groups. So like, we agreed to play with the single. It was Joe. And Adamski, the GM at Sweetens, let us play for free. And we had a blast with him. He was just, like, as a true certified golf sicko, Joe Bidwell, for sure.
That's so they let you play for free because you raised your hand to play with the single?
Yeah, they're pushing kindness, I guess.
That's pretty
and
cool.
And the openness, yeah. So it was, Sweden's a really special place to play another nine-holer. Schoolhouse Nine kind of, I guess, I feel like it has a similar feel in, like, the setting, I guess, of where it is. But it also has that, like, same you-can-play-all-day situation. So, I mean, there's definitely ties back to Schoolhouse Nine and Sweden. And just, like, the vibe and the environment. I think you and I definitely, you know, have a strong appreciation for Schoolhouse Nine. I think actually, one of the first podcasts I saw or your YouTube videos was your interview with the owner of Schoolhouse Nine. So
Cliff Miller.
Yeah, full circle moment.
I love it. Yeah. Cliff is an interesting guy. That Schoolhouse Nine has been in his family like several generations, but he, a couple of years ago, he moved his family to California. Not really sure the backstory there, but when he left, I think he broke up the restaurant part of the business and the golf course business, sold them separately, but the golf course he sold to his superintendent, Curtis, who's running it now.
Yeah. Curtis is great too. Yeah. So. Yeah. Curtis said, we can come back. And so we're ready to go back and do the 100 next year, whenever Curtis will let us out there.
Love it. And what you mentioned, your wife there briefly, she had the shot of the day. Is she still beaming from having the only ace of the day?
Yeah. You know, personally, I can't decide if it's a good thing or a bad thing that she got an ace before me, but I know I am really happy for her. And she has had some great energy since then. And yeah, we'll see. I was at one point, she's like, oh yeah, maybe I can retire now. And I think she was just messing with me. So because, you know, her being able to play has allowed us to kind of travel and play a lot of really neat places all over the country. So
that's cool. Yeah. I want to get to some of your travels here in a bit, but before we move on from the 100 hole hike, tell the folks just to give a shout out to the organization you're raising money for. Cause this isn't your only golf event that you do for Little Lights, correct?
No, yeah, I do a Little Lights Summer Classic, which was a scramble that we've done at Queenstown. Our first time we did it was at Langston, and last year we did it at East Potomac. So we've been bouncing around to some of the cool spots in the DMV that I want to highlight. So I haven't booked. I wish I could come onto a podcast and set things up and just start selling registrations, but I haven't booked my Summer Classic for this year. But hopefully I have something. I'm working on something cool, so hopefully we have something to report back very shortly.
All right. Well, we'll share the info when you do, and I'll put it up on Beltway Golfer.
Happy to help that.
The folks, a rundown of what Little Lights is. Give your organization a plug.
Yeah. Little Lights is an urban ministry in Southeast DC, and we work with three core public housing communities, Potomac Gardens, Hopkins, and Benning Terrace. And so the founders have been working with underserved youth in DC for 30 years now. And so it's a cause that I was really looking to support when I was looking for a career change. And so I'm really grateful to be working with Little Lights now and writing grants for them and doing some fundraising. And it's a cool opportunity to do, you know, real call for good outings that can help impact people's lives and just be really fun play, you know, opportunities to play golf and get to know people who want to support such things. So, yeah.
Love it. Good cause. That's cool. I was not really familiar with the work, but after you invited me to the whole 100 hole hike and went on the website and did a little research and, you know, great cause. So it seems like you're working for a great organization. Awesome. Well, so I do want to get into some of your travels, but I want to switch gears for a moment because a couple weeks ago I did a big trip with my family and I had multiple motivations for this podcast, but one of them, I kept getting questions online about the trip I took to Scotland. So I want to take 10 minutes or so to do a rundown of this trip to Scotland. Have you done a trip to the UK for golf yet?
I've not. So I have my own questions as well. Perfect. So, but yeah, I'd love to hear more.
Well, I'll give a rundown because this was a little bit of unusual. I mean, you're a golf sicko. I mean, we're going to get into some of your travels in a minute, and you've played some highly sought after and courses and some tough tee times that average Joe can't necessarily play. And so the typical Scotland golf trip is, you know, getting a tour planner, dropping whatever it is, 5-10 Gs, playing anywhere from 5 to 8 bucket list, you know, top 50 in the world courses in Scotland. This was not that, you know, this kind of came about organically. We've got a busy summer with like kids, travel, sports and stuff like that. And so we wanted to go big for spring break, but this was a big family trip. So I had wife, kids, in-laws who have 3 kids, and then my mother-in-law and her boyfriend. But the key point there is my mother-in-law is a golfer. So we had like 11 people and like half of them are golfers, half of them are not. The golfers really vary in age ranges and playing ability. And so we had like 11 days in Scotland and I showed up with no tee times. Didn't book anything. I mean, it's kind of the way I roll even around here, playing a lot of weekday golf, but figured, you know, the old course is going to try to do the 2-day reservation window where you can just apply to play 2 days out or walk up as a single on the day of and see if you can get out. But everything else is going to figure out. So the itinerary, the highlight of the trip was really my first round, which was North Berwick. And North Berwick is just an insanely phenomenal course and kind of had a bluebird day out there. But the funny thing about that outing was I rolled out there as a single, you know, it was kind of mid-afternoon. So I figured, it was midweek, figured I could probably had a good chance of getting out. Was able to get out with like a 40-minute wait, but I roll up to the first tee and there's an Army Navy Country Club stand bag sitting right at the first tee. And I'm like, man, I'm going, you know, you travel whatever it is, a couple thousand miles to the, you know, eastern coast of Scotland. And the first tee, there's a guy who turns out lives one neighborhood away from me and is a member at the closest country club to my house. So that was pretty wild. But North Berwick is a stunning course and seems like it should be even higher on some of those rankings than it necessarily is.
Did you have to hit over, I guess, the wall?
Yes. Yeah. I successfully hit over the wall. You have to hit over a couple walls there. There's one that runs right along a green, and there's at least one, maybe two, that like cut right across the fairway. But the first thing that's so obvious when you get there, and the closest thing to around here, I mean, you don't even really get this at East Potomac. The closest thing I would say is Reston National, for what I'm about to say. And that is when you, like at North Berwick, and this is also the case in St. Andrews, is when you're near the clubhouse, when you're out of the course, there are non-golfers walking around everywhere with their dogs, without. I mean, the beach is on one side. It feels like a public park. And there's several points where you're like lining up your approach shot and you've got to wait for someone to walk across like a path that cuts right through the fairway. Which the only thing I can really compare that to is Reston National. Or if you play Reston, there's it's kind of part of the neighborhoods. There's people walking their dogs or jogging like everywhere. And it's a good thing in my opinion. But anyway, so we played North Berwick, ended up playing, we went to St. Andrews. I'm confident I could have gotten on the old course and part of me regrets not getting on the old course, but there was some logistics with who was going to be playing in our group, including my nephew, who's a relatively new golfer, doesn't have an official handicap. There was some timing, some car issues. We ended up keeping it simple and we were able to get a kind of a tee time on any of the other courses we wanted. Ended up playing the Jubilee, which is the course closest to the ocean, and caught a day where we had like 35, 40 mile an hour winds, which just pummeled us for about 4.5 hours. But it was a great experience nonetheless.
I can't believe you had a chance to play the old course and you pass it up. You're a better man than I am, Alex.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm confident I'll be able to get back and play it. I mean, there was also like, you know, this was a big trip. There was a lot of expenses being flown on this trip. And, you know, I could have ditched everyone and played by myself, but for the four of us with caddies and the cost of us and with, you know, some of the skill levels, like, wasn't sure if it was really gonna be worth it to drop like whatever it was going to be, like probably close to $2,000 for the four of us to play, and we weren't necessarily guaranteed to get out on it. I mean, I walked around enough on it, and I'll get back there. You know, when the trip was totally done, yeah, I'd be lying if I said, you know, should I have tried harder to get on the old course? Yes, that, you know, that did cross my mind, but no regrets. I had a great time. We also played they've got a 9-hole course called the Balgove, which the night we showed up at St. Andrews, I just, you know, called the main number for St. Andrews and said, what is your shortest course? They're like, Balgove. Is anybody on it right now? I think there's a few people out there. Went down like at the golden hour, played 9 holes with like 8 of us. And it was like, I mean, you know, it's a golf course that never gets talked about in the St. Andrews property, but it was like, it was paradise. I mean, we had a 9-year-old, an 11-year-old, a 13-year-old, a couple guys my age, me and my brother-in-law, and then a 78-year-old. And it was like, and there was a bunch of kids that looked like maybe they were, you know, go to school maybe at University of St. Andrews or something, but it was really cool course. But I got to do all the touristy stuff at St. Andrews. I will say though, you know, I think in my head, I don't know if there's many other golfers that have hit St. Andrews and done the whole old course thing, but I think in my head, so much was built that it was all a bit smaller than I had. I think sometimes you build up places in your head, like the buildings on the far side of 1 tee and 18 green. They, on TV, they just look kind of enormous, and all the millions of pictures you see, and you get there and you're like, it's not as big as I pictured, but
yeah, I mean, with all they have going in there, they're jamming a lot into a certain space too. So I guess there's just a ton of traffic.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's definitely a factory. I mean, there's just the folks walking around with bags and the foursomes from, you know, first light to sundown, that place is packed.
Does it feel tighter than like, cause I think when I think of a factory locally, I mean, I think of Bethpage. Like that one might be similar with so many courses and it being, you know, public and things like that. Did it feel more packed in than Bethpage?
Felt a little, I mean, when I think Bethpage, I think the difference is Bethpage has that massive parking lot. Like some Bethpage is one of the largest parking lots in golf. And that's what I think of. And so at Bethpage, all of the tee boxes of the 5 courses are kind of spread out like horseshoed around the parking lot. St. Andrews is a little bit scattered, and there is one main parking lot, but it's not nearly as big because some of the courses and the clubhouses and the starter shacks are in different places. So it's kind of well
crammed in. Yeah. More crammed in than Bethpage. I mean, they have the Lanford in Bethpage, and you know, St. Andrews probably has more of a city, city feel to it. So
I will say the one thing. So right past, and maybe this is just me being, you know, I have some anti-corporate tendencies, but right over the wall at 18 green, the closest, there's a little hut right next to the big old R&A building that you'd recognize in every photo of St. Andrews ever. Right next to that is a little hut. And I'm going to get the name of it wrong, but it was like Old Tom Morris Links. It was like a little shop, Old Tom Morris Links by Travis Matthew. And I don't know what about, there was something about the, like Travis, and I looked it up later, and I guess Travis Matthew has become the quote unquote official apparel partner of St. Andrews. But it kind of like seeing this giant Travis Matthew sign, like right over the iconic 18th green, kind of like brought the entire place down a slight peg from, and not a big peg. I'm not going crazy, but like, I was just like, the reverence was just kind of brought down just a little bit. Yeah. But anyway, I had a great time nonetheless in St. Andrews. The rest of the trip, when we were kind of traveling around, we went more inland, got away from Lynx Golf, but with the crew we had, played 3 more different courses that were all more inland, heathland style courses, played 9 holes at each, and each one of them was different and fantastic. Like each course we played, we just walked up, no tee times, two of the three were honor code, where you put the money in the honesty box and just kind of walk out. All three, there was people on, but weren't crowded, and were fantastic experiences. Like all of them.
Did you research these places, or did you just kind of drive down roads and there's a golf course? I'm gonna go play it.
No, all three of those courses, we were in a situation where, like, either we had dropped off members of our family for whatever touristy thing they were gonna do, or we finished lunch or something. And then I pulled out my phone and typed in golf courses nearby in Google and would read reviews of, like, maybe the four or five closest ones and pick out one based on the reviews sounded like our speed. So, like, there was one, for instance, we were in, oh gosh, I'm forgetting the name of the town, but it's a pretty popular town. But anyway, this course was a little bit further, but in the reviews, it was like, you know, the place was perfect for my kids, 9-hole course. Like, there were some things in the reviews that made it seem like it wasn't going to be crowded. You could probably get on with the tee time. It wasn't brought to you by Travis Matthew, but it also wasn't like it wasn't a total dump. And, like, so there's this one spot called Alva Golf Links, ALVA, which was kind of like in this blue collar town. God, I can't remember the larger town that we were actually in, and we got there and it was like literally on the side of a mountain and where you're overlooking the town. And it was a little rough around the edges. We went in the clubhouse and the two guys are just, you know, shooting pool inside. And the one guy kind of worked there, but, like, he didn't even really want to work the cash register. She's like, just put money in the honesty box. Like, I'm in the middle of a match, my guy, my mater. But everybody came across, like, couldn't have been more friendly. You know, no one wanted to talk American politics or anything like that, thank God. And it was dynamite. So, I mean, I guess one of the things that I wanted to communicate to the American golf world is you can do an awesome Scottish golf trip. I mean, this was a little unusual because a lot of those rounds I played with my 9-year-old and my 7 or 8-year-old mother-in-law and, you know, different age groups and playing abilities, but you can absolutely make a pretty awesome Scottish golf trip work without a big time tour operator. If you can swallow the fact that maybe you're not going to play only top 100 golf courses or whatever.
And you got North Berwick anyway, so.
And you can still knock off one or two. I mean, a lot of them you could probably show up as a single in the afternoon and get out a lot of the big ones, including St. Andrews. That's why I'm confident, like, you can get out on St. Andrews. So the gentleman that we got paired up with, the Army-Navy member at North Berwick, they were playing St. Andrews, I think, the next day after I played with them. And they were like, oh, yeah, as we were communicating with the operator, we applied for that 2-day window. So anybody can apply for 2 days out. Like, today's Thursday, you could apply to play St. Andrews on Saturday. And if you got it, you book a plane, you're out there, you're playing. So anybody can do that. And he's like, we got our first time, the first time we asked, or like one of our preferred time, whatever. Like, that, they got out at like 10:30 and the first day they tried. And so when I was chatting with the guy at the desk at St. Andrews, so they have the 2-day window where you can apply for up to your foursome, but they also have the single same day waiting list, which I think they just implemented last year. And I asked the guy, I said, what percentage of people that apply for the 2-day window get out? And he was like, shoulder season, it's pretty high. It's like, you know, probably 60-70%, maybe in season's a little lower, maybe 30%. And I said, what about the singles getting out? He's like, same thing. They're like, this time of year, and this was, you know, this was in April. He said, yeah, you'll probably get out. Like, if you're a single, like, not guaranteed, but so that's why I was confident I could, if I really pushed, I could have done it. But
that's good. That's good to know. It's good knowledge. I feel like what I've heard and what I've looked into has just made it seem, I've seen some crazy, you know, thousands of dollars to guarantee tee times and things like that. And I have read about, you know, the 2-day bout and the single bout and everything like that. I should be a little more optimistic. I feel like I've been able to get on as a single or just twosomes, you know, locally, but I don't know. Something about it's got me thinking it was a lot harder to get. So
that's sure. Well, I mean, I think those thousands of dollars to secure the tee time, that's part of their business model, honestly. Yeah. And to secure that, there's a bit of rolling the dice, but, like, before we left for the trip, my whole plan in my head, I was like, okay, anytime we're within an hour of St. Andrews, I'm going to apply for the 2-day thing and I'm going to play it no matter what. And then when I got over there and the reality of family and rental car dynamics, I was like, you know, and I'm going to let it lie a little bit. I'm not going to push the envelope, but
yeah, great trip. My one question for you is going to be how open-ended you left it. It sounds like you left it very open-ended and it worked well. And that's the beauty of Scotland from what I've been reading and looking into, is that you can find a great golf course anywhere. Basically.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, and that's what, I mean, I think a lot of folks maybe learned from some of Tom Coyne's books, you know, but both his course called Ireland and Scotland is he played a ton of those courses where he just kind of showed up honesty box and just walked out. And there's a ton of courses that there's nobody even working there and you can just kind of go out and do your own thing. So yeah. Anyway, I'll be back. I had a great time. Almost killed my entire family driving on the wrong side of the road, but there was only, it's only one instance.
There only real one.
I got honked at a lot, but the one thing else, I mean, the driving over there is a little bit wild. It wasn't my first time driving the wrong side of the road. Like I mean, I drove for a week in Jamaica on the wrong side of the road, but it's a little bit more rural and had zero issues. Here, one of the big things is, and this is not golf related, but there's no yellow lines in between lanes. So when you have got two lanes going the same direction, there's a white dotted line. And then when there's two lanes going opposite directions, it doesn't look dramatically different. And so at one point I thought both lanes were going in the same direction. And I, you know, I just kind of drift over to the right lane. I'm thinking I'm slowly passing the cars on the left. And one of the tractor trailers I'm passing starts like aggressively honking. And it was because like car traffic was coming at me as we're on this highway. Anyway, he let me in. We didn't die. We're still here. So all good.
The true meaning of driving on the wrong side of the road.
That's right. It was a bit of a Clark Griswold moment as my nephews started joning on me for the rest of the trip. Anyway, I do want to get back. So that's my Scottish trip. Anyone who's listening to this, any more questions, don't hesitate to reach out. I'm happy to answer or provide any more details about the Scotland trip if you're heading anytime soon. Anyway, so you just back to you and I want to hear what we're going to talk about some of our own recent and maybe not so recent golf rounds, but you just had a weekend this past weekend and this is going to lead into, I want you to talk a little bit about, you know, some of your destination golf rounds and what kind of your strategy and motivation is to play some of these spots. Because this past weekend you played Prairie Dunes, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think the weekend after we did the 100 hole hike, you had got an early tee time or a preview tee time at Broom's Edge.
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about, you know, how you get some of these tee times, like how often you get to these places. You're a pretty well-traveled golfer.
Yeah. I mean, my wife started playing golf in COVID. And so since then, we've been checking out a ton of spots, and I think it's all part of a bad influence by a friend that actually does communications over in Nationalinx Trust, a mutual friend of ours. So,
yeah.
You know, we just talk about golf courses all day. His knowledge about golf courses, you know, Jeff is, I don't know, upper 5th percentile knowledge on golf course architecture. And so just having a friend like that and, you know, having opportunity to, I mean, I think like what, you know, what you said about the old course is just like, you know, if you get yourself in the right place and, you know, you give yourself a chance, you know, a lot of times you can, you know, things can open up. And so that's kind of how these things have been working, I guess. And so, yeah, Prairie Dunes is probably, I feel like it's like the best golf course I've ever played. And so it's a
really
Maxwell design in Hutchinson, Kansas. So definitely had to tell you about my commute.
You did. When we spoke on the phone, you said you arrived at like, you know, after midnight and had a 7 a.m. tee time, 3 hours or a couple hours away or something.
Yeah, got into the hotel at 5 a.m. and I closed my eyes, but I didn't fall asleep. Just I committed to just getting rest right before it. So I actually have never stayed up like in college or going out. I've never stayed up through the night for any reason. So right. This is my first true all-nighter
That's a heck of a reason for an all-nighter, you know, destination golf. Love it.
Yeah, there's a reason why they call certain people golf sickos, I guess, you know.
What time was your tee time?
7:30.
Oh, my gosh.
So and there was a little bit of a delay. So I got to my rental, and it was in Kansas City at 1 a.m.
So I got more sleep than that sleeping in my car for Bethpage Black.
I believe it.
Continue, sorry.
I don't know. I think Perry Maxwell as a golf course architect is like the most underrated golf course architect. He has a lot of his work is at, you know, Augusta. You can tell those are like rolling potato chip greens that mm-hmm. he has. You know, kind of like, I think a seventh hole at Augusta looks like a flying saucer. It's a Perry Maxwell green. So yeah, I don't know. Just finding cool golf courses and architecture, things that make you think, things that make you feel something with every shot, you know, that just interests me. And just being able to like kind of walk some of these like fairly historic places and see, you know, why did so many people come and play here for so, you know, so long, and just all the history that goes into it. So two of the courses that I played, so Prairie Dunes is one, and then another one I got onto through the Fried Egg was the Old Town Club, which is Winston-Salem. And
yeah,
that's one of my, I'd probably put that in my top five favorite courses played as well. So yeah, just a really cool space. It feels like, you're walking around Augusta when you're there, just all the rolling hills and the crazy greens there. And it's just, yeah, the routing, I guess that's another thing about Prairie Dunes Old Town is like those are the first courses that I played and I remembered every single hole, just the routing. I could play it through in my head. And I think that's like a real mark of a really solid golf course right there. If you can remember every hole. I mean, for me, like if I play a course a couple times, I'll start to remember, you know,
but sure.
Play it once and remember right after exactly all the holes. Yeah, that's real special. So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. I replay. I think some people's memories works in different ways from other people, but I certainly try to do that a lot. I'm trying to remember, you know, a lot of times I don't keep score while I'm playing. And so immediately after I'll try to recreate, I'll try to figure it out after the fact. Maybe if I'm driving home and I'll go hole by hole or the next day or something like that. And there are, you know, the courses, you know, I'm thinking off the top of my head, like around here, like a Potomac Shores or something, where there are some holes where it's like, there's like a 2-minute cart ride between holes. That if you have a few of that, it makes it really hard to remember. Like, okay, I kind of remember that hole, like, because a lot of it is you're remembering the transition from, you know, 5 green to 6 tee or whatever it is. And those courses that are just really spread out over huge swaths of land make it really difficult to remember them.
Totally. Yeah. That's one of the cool things about Prairie Dunes is I guess the original 9 was by Perry Maxwell. And then he designed the rest of the 18 and he passed away and his son did. The other 9 holes, but it's not like front 9, back 9. It's actually all intertwined. And when you think about this is actually my second time going back there. And when they talk about the original 9 and you can like picture in your head exactly how that routing worked in the 1930s, when you're walking from green to tee, I think your comment about the long drives at Potomac Shores, you know, that kind of reminded me of like the greatness of some of these, like, you know, these golden age designs and being able to walk them and yeah, just really cool little walks from green to taste, really.
Sure. I mean, I'm sure it helps when you're building a place that doesn't, you know, isn't tied into a residential development and, you know, but Prairie Dunes, like, so part of my question is, I mean, and anybody listening, your Instagram is at DJ Lee and you can, right? Do I have that right?
DJ Lee? 387.
What is it? At DJ Lee, what?
387.
At DJ Lee 387. I'll tag you here at some point when I'm posting this. But you look at your story. You can scroll through your stories. You do a much better job of keeping up the stories. I do an awful job at that. But you can see some of the courses you've played all over the country are pretty remarkable. And one of the reasons they stand out, not just for being, you know, really top-notch courses, but some of these are the types of courses where somebody looks at it and go, how did he get on there? And so, you know, you already mentioned Fried Egg. I think I've only played in one Fried Egg, but like organizations like that have these big events, Golfers Journal is another one, can get you into some courses that you otherwise might not play. But like Prairie Dunes, for instance, like how did you get out on Prairie Dunes this past weekend?
Yeah, I mean, that's a Golfers Journal. They had an event there on Monday. And
okay.
They have a couple members in the Golfers Journal who were hosting additional tee times around that. And so,
nice.
So I saw that, yeah, just like having an open ears and eyes to certain situations, you can kind of be able to get some sweet treats out of this,
That's the key. You got to pay attention. Right. Right.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And just, I guess being optimistic, right. Too. And, you know, just being able to have the time and to be able to do some of these things too, you know, stuff. So, like kind of you said, like getting on as a single, if you're willing to play alone, serve your own foursome with your boys or anything like that. Like, if, you know, like even just Jess and I as a twosome, we've been able to get on places. Like last year, we played an abandoned dunes trip in less than 6 months, I think.
Really?
And so we got to play everywhere. And it was because we were willing to stay off resort a little bit for part of it, like half of the trip and half of the trip we stayed on. And then, yeah, just piecing it together. I mean, there's opportunities if you're not traveling in a group of 4 to 8 guys, you know.
I've also heard at a place like Bandon Dunes that, you know, I know they've changed their process a little bit here in the last few months, but so many people book out so far in advance and they have a cancellation policy of, I can't remember, it's either 30 days or 60 days, but they get a ton of cancellations at that number. So if you're looking at 30 days out from your reservation, if you start pinging them right at that 30 days, there's a good chance some things will open up. And so if you kind of do those types of strategies, you know, you can make it work.
Yeah. And hustle, you know, just having a little bit of hustle, staying off property can open things a lot too. You know, it's one of those places I know that like Sand Valley and Bend and Dunes have actually very affordable lodging right next to those places. So,
and what time of year do you do Bend and Dunes?
We did April. So it was a little bit before. I mean, I think summer's the best time to go to Bend and Dunes.
Sure.
We did get a, you know, half of our rounds were a little rainy, a little windy, but I think that's part of the experience, you know, personally.
Sure.
If it was like not windy and sunny the whole time, I feel like would have, you know, missed out on something almost. So
yeah, that's the way I felt at St. Andrews. You know, it was like, if it was going to be a beautiful day, we enjoyed the 40 mile an hour winds. And in fact, my brother and I, who are both on the same trip, we thought this was prep for Bandon. So after reading Dream Golf, I don't know, 15, maybe almost 20 years ago, and talking about it every year, I'm finally doing Bandon this year. And part of the reason I asked when you went is because we're going deep into shoulder season. So there's a variety of reasons of why we're going late, but we're not going until mid-November. So we have some of the group's a little on edge about, you know, the type of weather we're going to see. But like to your point, I'm excited for the experience regardless.
Yeah. I mean, my understanding was, I mean, even like the December Bandon trip is very interesting to me because it's really good rates, but yeah, you could get perfect weather some of the days too, but you know, you might actually get washed out too. So there's, you know, it's rolling the dice, but you know, I think you'll enjoy it in November.
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
I'm pumped regardless. Another thing I want to ask you about, well, you have one interesting role that we're not going to talk about, but anybody that meets David in person can ask him what that is and you can maybe figure it out by the illusion. But I want to ask you about a role you got coming up later this year. You're going to volunteer at the Walker Cup at Cyprus.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I don't know, between Pine Valley and Cyprus, that's like one in two in America, I guess. Right. So I don't know which is which. I'll have to find out one day and be able to report back. So. Need to see both. But yeah, just being opportunistic and trying to get, you know, put yourself around some of these situations. So we applied my wife and I, Jess, applied to volunteer at the Walker Cup. So we'll be out there in September and just really excited to see that place. I mean, we've actually played Pebble before.
Okay.
So we've been out there and we go out to San Jose, our godson, we have good friends out there in San Jose. And that's kind of opened some doors over there for us. But yeah, really excited to see another Allison McKenzie design. Yeah.
What type of, I mean, I'm imagining that the motivation there was just get on the property, see Cyprus in person. But what, because it's not a big time PGA Tour event that needs tons and tons of volunteers to move, you know, move fans and that sort of thing. Do you have any idea what you're going to be doing as a volunteer?
Yeah, I mean, we got in as a, I think we were like subs, like we're like an alternate to help in a couple different options. So I think one is like to be a backup walking score. And I think some of the other things that they need support with, just like, I don't know, it could be like ticketing or something like that. But
yeah, I imagine Cyprus, I mean, the Walker Cup, from what I've seen from clips of it and video that, you know, there's not there are people there, but it's not, you know, there's not a ton of fans or anything, but I imagine at Cyprus there might be, cause, you know, a lot of locals probably have never been out on that course and that'll attract a lot of people to come watch the Walter Cup, I would think.
Yeah. Yeah. I assume so. I wish. Yeah. Yeah. Just really excited to be out there in Monterey and 17 mile drive again. And
yeah, that's cool.
See all that. It's real serene and it's pretty. And yeah, Cyprus is rare that I don't know. If, you know, I don't expect to ever be able to play there, but you know, so just to be able to see that work and then, yeah, see the young amateur players too. We haven't watched a ton of the Walker Cups. We've watched some of like the USAM events and stuff like that. So it'll be cool to see another international, you know, match play event.
Great. Yeah. What about here locally? I know you obviously do a lot of traveling golf. You have any local rounds that you want to talk about, some courses recently? Man. I know I've got a few.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have anything notable to mention. Yesterday I played at Langston. Most of my golf I play at local golf for me is like fitted in before work and cut down on my commute down to Southeast DC. So I go play Langston whenever the weather's good and whenever the first tee time is available. So just get in there, try to play 9 holes as fast as I can. And there's a couple people out there in different seasons that you'll see kind of regularly. So like a small micro community of nine before niners over at Langston. That's my typical spot. Yeah.
Well, Langston, what's interesting about in the news this week about Langston or I said adjacent to Langston is the big news about the RFK site. And I think everyone, you know, saw this coming, but it wasn't official until this week that the Commanders are building a new stadium on the site of RFK, which is huge news in a kind of for Langston. Because Langston, you know, most people listening to this, I'm sure, have been there, but some haven't. I mean, it's literally right across the street from the parking lot. I mean, yeah. You know, at one point, the part of the RFK property is probably, I don't know, 20 yards from the first tee box on number one.
Langston has a really cool scene, actually, on for Commanders games. One of the students that I kind of mentor at Little Lights, he has taken up golf. And one of the things that we really enjoy, we didn't even play golf some of these times, was just going to Langston to watch the Commanders play. Yeah, so they bring out like a 4-panel screen. Like if the weather's good, they'll bring like a 4-panel.
Oh, really? So like recently you've done
tethered,
this?
Yeah, this is this past season.
Oh, nice.
4-panel tethered screen, and it's just like this quadruple big screen that they put on the front patio, and they set up the chairs, and they do some like wings. They had a fresh fish fry, kind of like a local fish fry.
That's awesome.
And like so it's just a really cool scene out there on Commander Sundays.
Yeah, just the timing. I mean, if that gets done, I think what are they saying? 2027, 2028, or was it 29? When are they? I don't know, whatever it is. I said 2027, I was like, that's aggressive. Whatever, maybe 2029 on when that might be done. But the timing, I mean, who knows when the kind of the update / reno of Langston happens through National X Trust. But it could be, you know, it probably won't be done by then. But, you know, the fact that's happening, as well as the stadium opening, you can certainly see, you know, those worlds colliding quite a bit in the next 10, 20 years, whether it be, you know, Commanders players hosting tournaments, or, you know, people going to games playing before and after, or just the scene at Langston being impacted by the Commanders now playing again right across the street. I had a podcast early on in the Bellway Golfer podcast. I've done a handful at Langston, but one of them was with Ernie Andrews, who's been working there forever. And he talks about how back in the Redskins heyday, how a lot of the players would come over there and host tournaments and play in celebrity tournaments at Langston. He also, you know, as a side note, he tells a hilarious story of Mike Tyson in his prime going there for wings, even though he doesn't want to play golf, because he asked his limo driver, where can he find the best wings? And he said, Langston Clubhouse. But just like the impact of on Sundays and beyond of the Commanders back there, I think is going to just have a huge impact on what Langston is. And it's going to be all good things.
Really excited to see all the new updates, and it's going to be hilarious. I've spent many mornings just waiting for a frost delay or to get out there and watching early morning TV with Ernie, or just talking about whatever happened in sports right after. He's a good guy. He's a good people at Langston for sure.
Yeah, and I mentioned him earlier, but Randall, who was a part of your 100-hole hike, I played at least 20 or 30 holes with him at your 100-hole hike. Is he the GM there now?
I believe so. And a really good golfer too.
Really good golfer. He's got an interesting story. I might have him on at some point, because he grew up, like, his folks owned a driving range down in Richmond, and that's how he got into golf. And yeah, good golfer. But he's doing a lot. He's doing adding a lot of cool events. They did some glow golf the other night.
Yeah,
he's doing a lot of cool stuff. So there's some fun stuff happening.
The greens there look great, and the maintenance, they've done a ton of maintenance. It's looking real good. You know, some of those fairways, my understanding is it's hard, you know, with, you know, some irrigation challenges and things like that. But I think it's coming. Yep. I think it's coming. I think they're on their way. And yeah, I'm just really excited to see all the work that's, you know, is coming in some golf.
So yeah. I'll take this opportunity to also, I'll just make a couple notes on a couple recent rounds I've had in the last few weeks, aside from the Scottish trip. I did a post that got a lot of reactions on Instagram anyway, but played renditions right before the Masters, which is always a treat. I was actually kind of shocked. Renditions isn't making any top whatever lists. You know, there's, you know, some people really dig it, some people not so much. You know, when I was out there, the conditions were solid. You know, I had no complaints there. But I find it kind of surprising. The one week out of the year, Masters week, I would kind of think renditions would have like a packed tee sheet. And it didn't really. I mean, you get out there and it was in solid shape, and I always enjoy playing it. You know, I probably get out there once every 3 years, maybe, but I enjoyed it. I will say one thing about renditions has a great clubhouse, like top notch clubhouse. The pro shop's great. The bar, I think the bar in there is great. They get a great deal where the bartender at Renditions will ask you what you shot, and that's the price for your first beer. So if you shot a 89, you got an 89-cent beer. It's a nice little perk.
It's a great start. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a unique property because, like, if you look at the overhead, like 15 of the 18 holes are like really far from the clubhouse because, like, the property is like on the road and then it kind of like squeezes through this narrow chute before like all their property way out there. But Renditions was fine. I played Hogneck out on the Eastern Shore.
Love.
Just last week, excuse me. That was another one. We played with no tee time midweek. Bluebird Day. I mean, this was like a Wednesday. I was out doing some kind of drone work footage for a buddy of mine who does some work on some marinas down on the Eastern Shore. And we just kind of stopped on the way back and played 18 in like 3 hours and 5 minutes on like an absolutely perfect day. And we're like, why isn't it more crowded out here? I mean, it's a little remote, but love Hogneck. Yeah, but the range was like packed. Like all the locals were at the range. Like you couldn't get a spot at the range. We thought it was going to be busy, but we just walked right on the first tee.
They have a nine hole course there too. I don't know if you've messed around with that at all.
Yeah. I've taken pictures of it. Like I've seen it, but I've never actually played it. We were going to play that, but then we figured we were going to play that, but then the 18 was open. Oh. So like, let's see if we can jam out 18. We did.
That's a course where I feel like I have like a 10 shot. I'm not a great player. I have like a 10 shot difference between front nine and back nine. But when I play at Hogneck, almost always.
Which ones were? Because back nine's tighter because you're in the woods, yeah. But the front nine's got a lot of water.
Yeah, I don't know. I just struggle on that on the back there. But yeah, and I need to get back though, and we'll see.
Yeah. And then the last one I'll mention, because I just played it yesterday or last couple of days, I got invited down to an event at Keswick Hall outside of Charlottesville, which I had never stepped foot on. And it was a fun event. It was a Winemakers of Virginia event. And I got invited down and played, got to spend the night there, and the accommodations there are top notch. The course is beautiful. It's fantastic. They're going through a little bit of a patch with the fairways right now. I think they wish they had done some overseeding because there's some spots that I think they wish were healthier is the easiest way to put it. But, and they've got a USGA local qualifier soon. The greens
I saw your pictures, and I mean, I can't tell anything from the pictures that I saw from you.
Well, I'm going to post some more, but the greens are 10 out of 10. And I think once they get that other issue fixed, I mean, that course is well worth it. If you can get out there, or if you're staying there, it's a cool property. It was a property that was not even on my radar, even the slightest, until they did a course renovation about 9 or 10 years ago. And I guess they just renovated the whole resort and hotel piece a few years ago, but it's a really nice property and some of the best greens I've played in a long time. So, and the pro there, I think I'm going to have on the podcast, is a guy named Rob McNamara. Went out to dinner with him a couple of nights ago on the property. And it was just one of those ones where you just press play and he just starts talking and telling all kinds of stories. He's a guy who qualified for the US Open at age 17 at Oakmont in 1980, he said 83 or 82. And just had just like one of these kind of old school characters with just tons of stories.
Is he trying to run it back this year?
I don't know if he still has the game or not, but but cool guy. But I enjoyed Keswick Hall's cool place. I'm gonna post some pictures, but that's about it. I did attend the Sugarloaf Social Club hosted a little event down at East Potomac. It was a kind of a family friendly mini golf event down at East Potomac, which was really cool. Shout out to Ian and the crew there at Sugarloaf. Ran into Jeff, who you mentioned earlier down there. Yeah. That was a fun, I mean, there's not a lot of like kind of family friendly kids events where you can like, I mean, I brought my 3-year-old, I brought my 9-year-old. There was like, I ran into a bunch of people I knew like kind of from the local golf scene that were there with their kids. So that was cool. We need more of that.
I feel like Ian and you are living that life. Cause I feel like you guys always see a lot of posts of the East Potomac mini golf course from you and Ian over the past year. So you guys are just loving that place right now. I need to take some of our students there.
When you're trying to figure out something to do with your, I don't know how old this guy, I think his kid's 2 or 3 or 4. When it's your turn or you're on duty with your 3-year-old and trying to, it's either that or, you know, the local swing set for the millionth time. So I'll take mini golf over that every time.
For sure.
Well, listen, we're almost at an hour. I think that's a good spot to leave it, man. This has been great. I'm actually about to head out to walk around at Belhaven and watch the Belhaven 4 ball for a little bit. But thank you very much for coming on. It was a lot of fun, and let's get out and play some golf soon.
Thanks. Yeah, let's tee it up.
Love it.